Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. What's it like to be the son of a top player who swings a bat or works a pitch count? The new book, Sons of Baseball, examines that question, and the author, former TV publicist Mark Graff, joins me next. American Ninja Warrior, Kitchen Nightmares, and Hell's Kitchen are three of the long-running series our second guest today oversees. Arthur Smith is one unscripted power player, and you'll hear him before the top of the next hour. Also ahead, Kelly's Smart TV Rise, a pair of Comedy Central cancellations, our classic trivia question, and the 2023 update takeaway of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio, and present on Spotify, the iRadio Podcast Network, Acast, Odyssey, Apple and Google Podcasts, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you all for joining us on the program All About TV's Current and Future. A beautiful day here in the Big Apple, 66 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy to have you along for the ride. We have a great 90 minutes in store for you, a pair of wonderful people, and I've got a lot to say about this incredible week that happened here in New York City, the week of the 2023 upfront events, and the non-events too, and the Writers Guild strike, and a whole lot more. And we want to hear from you throughout the program, so how about giving us a call? Here's the number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And our chat room is open for business right now, ready for you. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And as always, while the promo is on the air, you can interact with others by using Facebook timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. It'll be live with you. Mark Graff, the author of the new best-selling book, Sons of Baseball, Growing Up with a Major League Dad, will join us live from Glenrock, New Jersey, after these news notes. More than 100,000 people have reserved their opportunity to get a smart TV set for free from new smart TV venture, Telly, that's T-E-L-L-Y. The company plans to make and ship 500,000 sets to customers nationwide this summer, then produce many more for free distribution next year. Telly sets operate on a dual-screen format with visuals and graphics on top, factoids, and stats at the bottom. Features include gaming, video calls, fitness content, and smart home controls. Advertising will appear on the bottom screen, personalized to boot. We are still trying to get the folks from Telly, which introduced themselves after a two-year stealth mode on Monday, on this very program. We have not heard back from them yet. We will keep trying. We hope to have them on for you as soon as possible. The cancellation gods have spoken at Comedy Central, dropping a pair of series executive produced by CBS Late Night host Stephen Colbert. Out for Good are Tuning Out the News, the satirical animated take on news happenings, and the weekly talk forum hosted by Charlemagne the God, each season in different titles. Tuning Out ran three seasons, starting in 2020 on CBS All Access, while Charlemagne's program had a two-year run. And that is news notes for today. If you love baseball, if you really like to know how baseball works from the standpoint of how it impacts a family, not just a baseball player, then a new book that came out 9 days ago should be really up your alley. It's called Sons of Baseball, Growing Up with a Major League Dad. And I'm happy to say that the person who wrote the book is my first guest today. I've known this person for a long, long time. He was the former publicist at USA Network, the former publicist at Madison Square Garden Network, one of the top regional sports networks in the country. And he also ran his own firm, Brass Communications, for a very long while. It's a pleasure to welcome to this program as a guest, joining us live from Glenrock, New Jersey, Mark Graff. Mark, welcome in. It's great to have you.
Hey, Simon. Yes, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. Congratulations on this book. It really does show baseball in a very different kind of way. When did you first get the idea that I want to do a baseball story from the standpoint of the sons of people in the game?
Yeah, well, you know, interestingly enough, I had the idea as far back as maybe 20 or 25 years ago. I don't even remember at this point what triggered it, but I thought to myself at the time, boy, you know, it must be kind of odd to be the son of a Major League Baseball player in the sense that, you know, so many sons, so many men have fond memories of their boyhood throwing the ball around with their dad and that sort of thing, and you know, I thought to myself, well, gee, what's it like if your father's a professional baseball player? Does he really want to do that on his day off? And he's gone for most of the summer anyway, traveling and so on. And even when he's home, they're at the ballpark most of the day and that sort of thing. And then there's the other issues, you know, when you're a kid and you're playing little league ball, that sort of thing, and everybody knows your father's a major league baseball player, they look at you differently, you know, and they hold you to this absurdly high standard, because you have to remember that even the last guy on the bench on a major league team is still one of the greatest baseball players on the planet. Just to get to the major leagues, you have to be that good. And so here's this kid, you know, you could be 8-10 years old playing rec league or little league, and people are comparing you to your dad. I mean, it's so unfair, so unfair. So you have to go through that, and then you go out in public and want to have a quiet afternoon out with your father, and people keep interrupting for autographs and pictures and that sort of thing. So it's a whole unique lifestyle. So I had the idea like 20, 25 years ago, but I was working at the time, and I also knew that I wanted to interview guys face-to-face. So between the time commitment and the expense, it just was not – it was a non-starter. Now flash forward to 2020 and COVID, and that was my last year working before I retired in November of that year. And as anybody out there listening, I'm sure, knows that, you know, I was doing 10, 12, 15 Zoom calls a week. Everything was by Zoom. So I retired in November of 2020, right just before, actually, Thanksgiving. And the book idea wasn't even on my radar. But then a week or so later, my first week of retirement, it came back into my head, and I suddenly realized, oh, wait a minute, the two obstacles no longer exist. Number one, I have the time because I'm retired. And number two, I don't have to worry about the expense because now I can do the interviews by Zoom. So I thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. I remember my wife, she was still working at the time. She came home for dinner one night in December of 2020, and we were having dinner, and I said, I've created a retirement project for myself. And she said, what's that? She said, I'm going to try to write a book. So, and that was the start of it. You know, that was the start of it. And I did the first interview in January of 2021. And 2.5 years later, here we are.
Once you decided to get this book going, how easy or hard was it to get the sons of these players? And we're talking, you know, some of the best in the game. People like Mariano Rivera, like Roger Maris, like Ron Guidry, Mike Hargrove, et cetera. How easy or hard was it to get them to speak with you?
Well, when I started, I figured that would be the biggest challenge because I didn't know anybody. You know, I didn't know any of the sons, not one. So I thought, okay, I'm going to try to network a little bit. And there were a few people I knew who I thought maybe they know someone who might know someone, you know, that kind of thing. So one thing led to another, and I got a couple of interviews, and then I started reaching out to team officials. Many of the teams in baseball have alumni directors, and they head up the alumni associations for the teams, and they run old-timers days and other types of events with former players from the organization. So they were very helpful, too, in giving me some contact information. So one thing, you know, it was just networking, and one thing led to another. I eventually networked my way to 18 interviews, but once I got the interviews, what I found was almost across the board, I think really 100%, was that these guys, the sons, really enjoyed talking about their boyhoods and about their dads and their dads' legacies in baseball. I think, you know, not a lot of people ask them about it, I think, and it was just something that they really enjoyed talking about and opened up about. So getting the interviews I thought would be a big challenge, and it took quite a while to finally get them, but it happened. But actually getting them to talk was not very difficult.
Ken Auletta, the popular author and writer for the New Yorker magazine, covers television, like yours truly, quite a lot, had this to say about Mark's book. And I quote, "This is a rare book about the sons of baseball stars and their relationship with and what they learned from their dads. Readers like me will be seduced from the first page, endlessly surprised by its tender tales." That book we're talking about is Sons of Baseball, Growing Up with a Major League Dad, published by Roman and Littlefield. It's been out now for over a week, getting very, very good reviews from people like Ken Auletta. And we've got the author, Mark Graff, former publicist at USA Network, publicist of own consulting firm, and Masters Group Network. He is with us live from Glen Rock, New Jersey, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Simon Apple, I'm with you live from New Weber, York. Thanks for joining us this Friday afternoon on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio, as well as our podcast site and our website, SwabbyTelevised.com, for the show about TV's current and future. Coming your way on Sunday, for the first time ever in the nearly 16 years this program has been on the air, we are going live on a weekend, specifically Sunday morning. Remember the start time, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific. That's 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific. And joining us will be one of the big winners of Series Best Independent Pilot Competition. It is an amazing story that you will be hearing about, and it's from an actress and a creator. Her name is Alenza Chanowitz. She'll join us live from Israel, and the program she did is called Chansky. It's a comedy, and it won the Comedy Pilot Competition. You'll hear her live from Israel that Sunday, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Mark, was there a common quality to everybody you talked with about the impact their fathers had on them beyond baseball?
A common quality? I don't know about that. You know, I would say a couple things. One is that pretty much all the sons told me that their fathers did not push them into baseball, try to get them to play baseball. Now, a couple of the guys I interviewed did end up becoming major league players themselves, but even they said their dads never pushed it. And the reason was, for all these guys, was that their fathers, they got to the major leagues, and they knew what it was like to get there and how hard it is. And all these guys, all these former players, they all had teammates down in the minor leagues and people that they became close to, friends of theirs, who they knew were really good ball players, but they languished in the minor leagues because they just never had the opportunity. And they know how tough it is down there, you know, riding the buses and making very little money. It's not an easy life. You have to really, really want it. So they didn't push their sons into it at all, you know, because they knew they didn't want to set their sons up to struggle like that. And baseball, like many sports, to a large extent, is a game of failure. You know, even a 300 hitter only gets 3 hits in 10 at-bats. So there's a lot of failure there, and you have to keep grinding and grinding and grinding and stick it out. So that was one common element, I think. And the other was that the families, you know, they tried really hard for the most part to raise their kids with as normal a lifestyle as possible. It was a challenge at times for a lot of reasons, but they tried to, you know, keep things on the down low in terms of what their dad did for a living. You know, they didn't they told their kids, you know, look, we, you know, don't brag about this, don't talk about it, don't act like you're better than anybody else because you're not, you know, we're the same as everybody else, that kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, I guess those were two common themes throughout the interview process.
Mm-hmm. One of the most interesting interviews you did in two ways was with Vadas Pinson III, the son of another one of the great ball players you feature. And it's interesting for two reasons. One, I'll talk about this whole situation with Bazooka Gum that apparently his father was very big on.
Yeah, you know, Simon, it's funny, but you'd be surprised how many times Bazooka Gum came up in conversations with these kids. And I think the reason was that in the clubhouses, you know, they have these, I don't know if they still do, but they used to have these big tubs of Bazooka Gum. And so in Cincinnati, Little Veda's dad, Veda Pinson II, played for the Reds. He was a really, really good outfielder, borderline Hall of Famer at that. And one day during batting practice, Little Veda was in the clubhouse, and his mission, he had three sisters. So his mission in going into the clubhouse, where they were not allowed, was to load up on Bazooka, to bring it out to them and to some of the other kids who weren't able to have access to the clubhouse. So Little Veda stuffed his socks, his pants, everything, every possible opening in his clothing, he stuffed with Bazooka Gum. And he was going to emerge triumphant from the locker room, except on his way out, he ran into Frank Robinson, the great outfielder who at the time was on the Cincinnati Reds. And Frank looked at the Bazooka tub, nearly empty, and he said, "What happened to all the gum?" And then all of a sudden he looks down at Veda, and Veda looks at him, and he sees this guilty look on little Veda's face. So he picks Veda up by the ankles, and he holds him upside down and shakes him a little bit, and all the gum came tumbling out like he had just won a slot machine jackpot or something. So, and I should point out, before people get horrified in any way, Frank Robinson was almost like Uncle Frank to little Veda, because Frank and Veda's dad were very good friends. So this was kind of done in a joking sort of way. He picked them up, and there goes all the gum falling all over the floor.
The other side of that interview is that his parents were divorced at some point.
Yes.
How did that impact his life growing up?
Yeah, it had a tremendous impact, and in a negative way. Veda was young when his parents divorced. I don't recall his age offhand, but he was, you know, maybe 8, 9 years old, something like that. And initially, he didn't really understand the whole thing. You know, all of a sudden, his father wasn't around anymore. He didn't really get it, like, why? And over time, Veda, the ball player, became a little bit estranged from the kids. And Veda, the ball player, as young Veda describes it, you know, was never really forthcoming in showing emotion to the kids, you know, his children. And so over the years, they became more and more estranged. And, you know, young Veda just had a really hard time dealing with it. You know, he was raised by his mother, and he grew up with the three sisters. So it was a household full of women. He said he had, you know, he felt like he really needed a male influence. He ended up joining the military, in fact, partly for that reason, just to, you know, have some discipline instilled in himself and to have some male influence in his life and all that. So years went by, and the elder Veda was a coach in the major leagues at that point. I believe he was out of work at this particular time when this happened. He was around 60 years old or so. And he suffered a stroke. The elder Veda did, and he was in the hospital, and young Veda would go to his bedside pretty much every day, and his sister even asked him, he says, why are you doing that? Why are you making such an effort? He really wasn't such a great dad. And young Veda said, you know what? No, I know he wasn't, but he was still our father, and I feel like somebody should be there for him. So his father was in a coma in the hospital. And young Veda would go visit. Of course, he was a young man at this point. He was an adult. And the doctor said to him, look, you know, your father can probably hear things, even though he can't speak. So if there's anything you want to say to him, feel free to say it, and there's a pretty good chance he'll hear it. So young Veda took his father's hand, and he said to him, Dad, if you love me and you can hear me, say I love you and squeeze my hand. And he said his dad squeezed his hand. And it was really an emotional telling by young Veda when he related the story, because after all those years, that was how he finally heard his father say I love you. Not literally heard him, but, you know, through the hand squeeze. And it gave him kind of a sense of closure. His dad died not long after that, probably just a few days later. And he felt like, well, you know, at least we had that one moment of closure, because I can never really understand the estrangement over the years. You know, why aren't you around? Why do you seem to not really be interested in me and all that? So having that one moment was really important to him.
Were any of the people you interviewed talking about how they tried to get into baseball on their own, and whether it was frustrating, whether it was successful, in a way to sort of equal what their dad did or top what their dad did?
Yeah, well, a few of them did try. I interviewed, for example, Larry Berra, one of Yogi's sons, and also Gil Hodges Jr., Gil's son, and they both played a couple of seasons of minor league ball. And, you know, it didn't fare all that well. Injuries did play a part in it. But by the same token, you know, both their dads are in the Hall of Fame. So it's kind of hard to compare them to that standard, right? And they both said, you know, they heard it from people in, you know, in the crowd in the minor leagues. Hey, you're not as good as your dad. you know, all this stuff, and, you know, far worse than that in some cases too. And, you know, they were pretty okay with it. They said, look, you know, I understand that. I'm not trying to be my dad. I just want to try to make my own way. And neither of them advanced very far in the minor leagues and had to move on to other pursuits. But, yeah, they heard it. They definitely heard it.
We'll speak with Mark Graff, the former TV publicist who is now the author of a brand new and, I'm happy to say, well-acclaimed book called Sons of Baseball, Growing Up with a Major League Dad. The foreword by Cal Ripken Jr. It's published by Roman Littlefield. And Mark joins us live from Glen Rock, New Jersey this half hour here on Tamarvi Televised. Tom Outbound with you live across the Hudson River where Mark is in New Ebbing, York, 66 degrees coming to the bottom of the hour. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call on our mailing list with Mark. It's 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Three episodes of Tamarvi Televised coming away next week will be on Monday, Thursday, and Friday. And on Friday, we hope, third time charmer, to finally have one of the top executives in Spanish language television from Estrella Media, Chief Revenue and Local Media Officer Steve Mandela. That's Steve Mandela. That's 1 week from today, May 26th, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. In the movie Field of Dreams, spoiler alert to those of you out there, Kevin Costner's character gets the opportunity at the end to reunite with his dad and to learn something about his dad and his relationship to his dad that he never really thought before. In any of the interviews you did you sort of get like a Field of Dreams moment from the interviewees?
You know, most of these guys, they, you know, because their dad was were major league ball players, they didn't quite have that moment. You know, in Field of Dreams, his dad was deceased. Ray Kinsella's dad was deceased, and they had that one moment of being able to play catch again in the cornfield in Iowa. And it was a really emotional moment, and it was really, I think it was at the heart of the film, and that's why whenever I talk about Field of Dreams, I talk about it as a kind of a baseball-centric film, but it wasn't really a baseball movie. It was more a father-son movie and about a father and son being reunited through the act of tossing a baseball back and forth. So, you know, these guys I interviewed, you know, they all have very fond memories of doing things like that. Playing ball with their fathers and so forth. I don't know that any of them resonated quite the same way as it did in fiction in Field of Dreams, you know, but that's Hollywood for you. But they do have very fond memories of it, for sure.
Yeah. Still a fantastic movie, and really sorry that Peacock passed on the opportunity to make it a television series. Hopefully somebody out there will do it in the future. I think it would make a great TV series, especially if they got Phil and Robinson, the people behind it, to do it. What do you think now that you are away from the day-to-day work in television? What do you think about the way baseball is operating now, the way baseball is covered, and did any of your interviews have something to say about how they see the game today?
Well, I guess I'll give you my opinion first. Looking at it now as a baseball fan and, you know, out of the television arena, obviously, I'll give you an example. This actually happened to my family just recently, within the last week or two. One of my sons scheduled an outing. It took us quite a bit to try to find a date when we could all do it. My son, his wife, their two kids, my wife and I, so six of us, to go to a Yankee game. So we finally found a Sunday afternoon game, Yankees Red Sox, in, I believe it was sometime in June. And he bought the tickets quite some time ago, many weeks ago. And then a couple of weeks back, Major League Baseball announced that Sunday's game, that game, was being flexed to the night. It was going to become a night game for TV. So, you know, it's like we have got – he has these two young children, school and daycare the next day, and, of course, he and his wife have work the next day. We can't do a Sunday night game. So he wrote a nice little note to the Yankee ticket office to see if he can get a refund, exchange the tickets for another day, and they wouldn't let him do it. They said, no, it's our policy not to, as if the policy was handed down from a mountaintop, when in fact they made it, and of course they can change it anytime they want. So that's just one example of TV's influence on baseball that I think a lot of people just don't think about. You know, here's a family with two young kids getting ready to go to a game on a Sunday, and oops, now it's a Sunday night. Sorry, you're out of luck. So yeah, there's a lot of, you know, it's high stakes money, and of course now you've got a lot of games on streaming services. The Yankees were on Amazon Prime the other night, I think it was Tuesday, and you know, there are people who don't have Amazon Prime. You know, they just don't, and maybe they don't have any streaming services at all, so they kind of get shut out of some games. I think Prime is doing 21 games this year. So you know, those are some of the tough aspects of it, I think. From a fan's point of view, I don't know that any of the guys I interviewed have similar experiences necessarily, but that's, you know, I'm just giving you my personal anecdote and I guess complaint, if you will, that things aren't always so fan friendly these days.
And what you are seeing is you're starting to see some of the major sports take more of their programming to what I call the mega content services, whether it is Apple TV Plus, whether it is Prime Video, Peacock, et cetera. I think one of the big stories that came out of the upfronts this week is that the National Football League is going to put more of their games, not just regular season, but playoff games for the first time, on a mega content service. Peacock is going to have a regular season Sunday night game. They're going to have exclusively a playoff game, an NFC wild card game. ESPN Plus is going to have an exclusive game. ESPN is getting more games for Monday Night Football, including doubleheader nights, not just one night as it used to be, but four nights out of the regular season. So there's a lot of testing going on, and of course, NFL Sunday Ticket going on YouTube. There's a lot of testing going on in football and baseball and so forth. Peacock now has, they started last year, the Sunday morning, like 11:30 noon window for games. So there's more of this effort is how far are we going to go in terms of now testing the water, but maybe down the road, more of the games, if not most of the games, at least regular season, will be in places we don't expect, like Netflix, an Amazon Prime Video, a Hulu, a Disney Plus, a ESPN Plus, Peacock, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and you think about it, you know, from the player's standpoint in the NFL, there are a lot more Thursday games, for example. And so they're asking these guys to knock each other's brains out on Sunday and then come back and do it again 4 days later on Thursday. It just seems to me that first of all, the product is likely to suffer, I think. Those Thursday games, they just, by and large, can't possibly be as good as the Sunday games. And it's not fair to the players from a health standpoint. So I don't know. I think there needs to be a fine line there. I understand that the TV revenue is critical for the leagues, especially with contracts and you know, free agency and so forth and being able to pay players and all that. But I think a lot of this come at the expense of the players and the fans. And that's not so great.
With all the acclaim that the book has gotten, have you gotten any whispers or people contacting you, Mark, about let's turn this into a documentary series, let's turn it into a scripted series, maybe an anthology show? I mean, yeah. It sort of lends itself to it.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because actually a couple days ago my literary agent had been approached by a guy who makes documentaries, and, you know, at this point, it's just in the talking stage. We're trying to set up a call for Monday, actually, to talk about it, and, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I think that given my experience with the Suns and their willingness to talk about their childhoods and so forth, I think that there are many others out there, many other sons of former players who'd be more than happy to have similar conversations. So in terms of a documentary, it wouldn't have to rely on just the people I spoke to, but it could be broadened quite a bit. So, yeah, we'll see where it goes.
And where do you go from here? Do you want to do more books? Do you want to do more, maybe get into script writing? Where do you see your career going post-PR?
I don't know, you know. about a year ago, you know, this, as I think I mentioned earlier, this has been like a 2.5-year process. So about a year ago, a friend of mine said, so you think when you're done with this, you'll do another book? And I pointed to the final scene of the first Rocky movie. It was the 15th round, and Rocky and Apollo Creed had just knocked the hell out of each other for 15 rounds, and they were hanging on each other for dear life at the final bell. And Apollo Creed says to Rocky, "Ain't going to be no rematch." And Rocky says, "Don't want one." And you know, if you had asked me a year ago, that's what I would have said, because you know, I wasn't even seeing the light at the end of the tunnel yet. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, it's been a year and a half already, and I don't know how, I don't know when this is going to be done. Now that the book is out and, you know, the dust is starting to settle a little bit, yeah, you know, maybe I'd do another one. It's possible. We'll see. Screenwriting, no, definitely not that. But another book, yeah, maybe.
In the meantime, check out this book, Sons of Baseball, Growing Up with a Major League Dad. It's by Mark Graff, our guest this last half hour on Smarby Televised. The foreword is by Cal Ripken Jr. The publisher is Roman and Littlefield. And if you want more details about the book and how to get it, you can go to www.roman, that's R-O-W-M-A-N.com. That's www.roman.com. And we hope to offer it perhaps as a prize for an upcoming classic trivia segment. Mark, it is a delight to have you on this program. Congratulations on not only Sons of Baseball, but the great career you've had in terms of, I've known you for a way longer time, and you've always been great, whether it's been with MSG Network, with USA, with your communication consulting firm, Brown Communications, and I'm just thrilled up the wall that that this new turn for your career has gone off to a fantastic start. Congratulations,
well, Simon.
All the very best to you, always.
Yeah, thank you so much for all those kind words. I really appreciate it, and of course, I always enjoyed working with you as well. And I especially appreciate the fact that you didn't tell your audience exactly how far back we go. So let's keep them guessing on our ages, all right? You don't tell,
yeah.
And I won't tell.
Okay, you got that deal. Mark, all the greatest.
Okay.
Take care. Have a super weekend.
Thanks, Simon. You too.
And like you said, we'll never tell. Mark Graff joining us live from Glen Rock, New Jersey. Again, the book is called Sons of Baseball, Growing Up with a Major League Dad. It's available through Roman and Littlefield, Amazon.com, other great bookstores in person or online. When we come back, topic trivia question of the week, my thoughts about the week we just had as our takeaway of the week, the Upfronts 2023. How will they concern how you watch television going forward? And then one of the big people in the world of unscripted television, Arthur Smith, will join us from Los Angeles. It's all coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You listen to the best internet radio on the planet. It's blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reach over 80 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out the Richard Miller Report. He's got the latest in all the sports action happening, whether it's the NBA and NHL playoffs, the PGA Championship, second round going on right now, and much, much more. The Richard Miller Report tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of our 90-minute edition to wrap up the week here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Albom with you along for the ride from New Haven, New York, 65 degrees, the bottom of the hour. Happy to have you along for the ride. Coming up later this half hour, we will have Arthur Smith, the wonderful unscripted TV pioneer behind such long-running shows as American Ninja War on NBC, Kitchen Nightmares, and Hell's Kitchen with the inimitable Gordon Ramsay on Fox, and a whole lot more. And we'll get his thoughts about the world of unscripted, particularly at a time when it looks like we're going to get a lot more of it this summer and fall, thanks to the Writers Guild of America strike. Before we get to that, and my takeaway of the week, or this week, about what transpired here in New York with all those upfront events, it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. And if you are first with the correct answer, you'll win three wonderful prizes. A wonderful Starbucks reward card from the folks at the BBC, the new Canela Kids coloring book based on the original series Super Ellis, wonderful tune series. One of the people behind Canela Kids was on our show a few months ago. And also the accompanying crayons for that book. And that's all coming your way if you know the answer to this question. Name the actor who played the Rebel on The Rebel. That's the Johnny Yuma character on that wonderful ABC Western series that ran from 1959-1961 with episodes now available on YouTube. Name the actor who played The Rebel on The Rebel. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. And if you are first with the correct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end of this Friday, we will post the question tomorrow, Saturday morning, on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, if you're a previous winner or a guest of this program, you are not eligible. And remember, we want your answer by email. And make sure you include your name and your mailing address. So if you win, we get the prize out to you ASAP. One more time, here's the question. Name the actor, that's the actor who played the Rebel on ABC's The Rebel. And if you want to know the answer, check it out on YouTube because episodes are playing there. Again, it's SimonApple04 at yahoo.com, SimonApple04 at yahoo.com. In order to win, just play in. Do so today, and all the very best. And now it's time for our regular Friday feature, the Takeaway of the Week, where we spotlight one or two developments that took place during this week that we think your takeaway from as being very important in how you might be watching and using television in the future. This week has been one of the most unique weeks I have ever experienced as a journalist covering the world of television. In fact, the first 3 weeks of this month have been, taken together, an incredible time that has really offered so much in terms of where we're going. We had the Interactive Ad Bureau New Fronts the first week of May. We had the podcast Upfront last Thursday. And then this week, we had, in the thick of the Writers Guild of America strike, we had the big players in television, NBC Universal, Fox, Televisa Univision, Telemundo, part of NBCU. We had Disney. We had Warner Bros. Discovery. We had Netflix, virtually, not in person. We had YouTube with their brandcast. And finally, the CW with their announcements about what they're doing in the near future and in the 2023-24 season ahead and beyond. And I want to break down what was learned here for yours truly in three different categories. And I'm going to do it a little differently than rather than do it event by event. I want to break it down with broadcast television, cable television, and the mega content services like Netflix and Amazon, Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, etc. But first, I want to give you a general thought. There is no question that the Writers Guild strike is playing havoc with television, especially broadcast TV. And it's playing havoc already. It's not waiting until the summer or the fall to go around. It is playing havoc because look what's happened already. The MTV Music and TV Awards were reduced from being a big spectacle with Drew Barrymore hosting to a bunch of video clips connected by a off-camera announcer. The Tony Awards, gone. The Peabody Awards, gone. The Daytime Emmy Awards, gone. The Primetime Emmy Awards, possibly in trouble, depending on how long this strike goes on. And every single television show that I know of that either was going into production for the first time or going into a new season, not happening. Production stopped, whether it's here in New York, Los Angeles, everywhere in between, here in the United States. So it's already had an impact. And frankly, it is time for the Writers Guild and the Alliance of TV and Motion Picture Producers to stop hiding from where they are and get back to that bargaining table and get a deal out. I get where the writers are coming from. We've said this on Sprung before. The writers are very concerned that because of shorter episode orders from the likes of the mega content services in particular, because of mini workrooms, because of all sorts of other things, but especially the whole situation with artificial intelligence, which everybody now, I think, is very clear, is going to impact television, how it's made, how it's created in some degree. And people do not want to wait, particularly the writers, for this to blow up in everybody's faces to get something done. They want guarantees in the latest contract that will make sure that rather than becoming obsolete, that they will have a job. They will have a livelihood. I get that. And I get that the producers, the Producer Alliance, doesn't want to negotiate with the press. I'm sorry to say this, but I think they've taken the wrong tack. We're not asking for negotiations, but tell us where you stand. And I'm sorry, you can't hide behind press releases or by position papers forever. And the Writers Guild cannot stand by and hide pickets forever. It's time to go back to the bargaining table and get a deal done. Because you are screwing up other industries. The Tony Awards are the worst-rated, lowest-rated award show on television. And the last thing they need, especially coming off the coronavirus pandemic, and the lowest ratings they've ever had for last year's show, despite a wonderful hosting job by Ariana DeBose, the Oscar winner for West Side Story, is for this show to be screwed up and screw up the Broadway community. There are shows right now, including ones that have just gotten major Tony Award nominees, like the musical Some Like It Hot and Kimberly Akimbo, that are fighting for their lives and need that Tony Award in some way to keep going. And then there are shows that may be up for Daytime Emmy Awards that might need the attention to keep going, and so on and so forth. We get the picture already. Now it's time to get back to that bargaining table, lock the door, and get a deal done. It can happen. And you don't do it if you keep your positions the way they are right now, which is we don't talk, we don't do anything. Either it's the writers, we pick it, or we boycott shows or events, or we discourage writers and showrunners and actors and so forth from attending live events where we can make the case, like Series Fest 2023, like some of the things maybe going on at the Paley Museum in Los Angeles and here in New York. It's time to get back to that bargaining table. Everybody, even if you need a mediator, let's get something done here, okay? And by the way, again, to the Writers Guild and the Alliance of TV and Motion Picture Producers, we'd love to have you on this program and talk about your side and the whole general situation. We're not asking if you negotiate, but we are asking that come out and tell the public where you stand and what is it going to take to get a deal done. That's all we want. And you deserve it. You out there deserve to know what the issues are and how it will impact how you watch and use television. So writers, producers, we're all ears. We'd love to have you. And it will be separate from each other. So you don't have to worry about the Writers Guild being in your half hour or the producer in your half hour. The invitation is open and it stands. Now, let's start with broadcast television. For ABC in particular, I think it was very clear at the Disney upfront that ABC is going to start the season with mostly unscripted programming, game shows, sports, and news magazines like 2020. And some of the people, like Lizzie Goldberg from TV's Top 5, The Hollywood Reporter, is already calling it strike-proof. And the only dramatic show, the only scripted show that's going to be on at the start of the season in September will be reruns of Abbott Elementary, which just won the Peabody Award. And because the Peabody's are not going to be held, it's not going to get the attention it really should have gotten for getting that award. Well-deserved, too, by the way. With the CW, they are going to be coming out with a fall schedule that they see themselves as strike-proof. And under the new ownership of majority owner Nexstar, they're going to be doing it with theme nights. So Mondays, for example, will be drama. They're going to be putting on All American, assuming that they can get the strike is over. And they're going to pair it up with the former AMC series, 61st Street, with Courtney B. Vance. They're going to show the episodes that did run in the first season on AMC and the ones that AMC pulled before running the second season. Tuesday night is going to be comedy. Four shows back to back to back to back, mostly from Canada, including one show that's gotten a lot of attention because it was carried on the Roku channel called Children Ruin Everything. I understand it's a very funny show. And there's a lot of good talk I've heard about the other programs that they're doing. Wednesday night, female-led dramas, both of them from Canada. Sullivan's Crossing, which just started a few months ago and is already doing very well on Canadian television, and The Spencer Sisters, starring Leah Thompson as one of those sisters. And again, so far so good up in Canada. Thursday night is going to be episodes of the former HBO, soon to be Max series, F-Boy Island, with F-Girl Island coming in 2024. And then Friday and Saturday nights, it's going to be unscripted, whether it's shows like Masters of Illusion, Whose Lines in Anyway, whose creator Dan Patterson was on our program about a month or so ago, Penn and Teller Fool Us, etc. And then Sunday nights will be documentaries, pop culture-like, with the popular I Am documentary, like I Am Alfred Hitchcock, I Am Kevin Costner, etc., etc. Now, the CW, which unfolded themselves in a press conference, rather than doing the big splashy event this year, they did it with a press conference and panel session, press conference, press breakfast, wonderfully done at the Park Lane Hotel, which is a place I used to go to when Paul Kagan, the venerable cable analyst, no longer with us, did all these wonderful cable programming, cable marketing, cable finance seminars in the Park Room, which, by the way, has been beautifully remodeled since then. They were must-see events in those days. Learned a lot from them. And Paul was the consummate moderator, the consummate ringmaster of those sessions, which featured the best and the brightest people in the cable TV world. The CW, I think, is dead set on becoming a major player. They're going beyond the norm. No, they're not getting rid of scripted television, but they're going to take their chances on shows that they can afford to do as either producing or co-producing. They're already working up a lot of shows, including a return of the popular TNT series, The Librarians, with Dean Devlin, once again back as executive producer. They're calling it The Librarians, the next chapter. So right now, ABC and the CW look like they are the broadcast networks that will be able to get going off the bat with original programming, largely unscripted. Or, in the case of scripts in the CW, from other sources, Canada, England, other places. When it comes to NBC, they got a problem to a point. And that is because most of their returning shows are not going to be made until the strike is over, including the Dick Wolf Chicago shows and the Law & Order shows here produced here in New York. However, they will have some scripted, at least two scripted shows, two scripted dramas, I should say, and one comedy show that already have had most of their episodes made. One is the new John Cryer series, Extreme Family. The two dramas are Found, which originally was going to be on the air last season or this summer. Now it's been moved to the fall. And another series starring Jesse Martin, who used to be Law & Order, as partner to Jerry Orbach, the late great one. And those three shows look like they will be on the air. They will not have a problem because they got their episodes made before the writer's strike. However, a lot of the scripted shows that NBC is bringing on for new seasons, they are affected by the writer's strike. So if the writer's strike continues, they will be in having to do a lot of redoing of that schedule and focus more on unscripted shows. And when it comes to CBS, same thing. Now, they have already said they think the strike will be over pretty much, that they will get on the new episodes of Young Sheldon, the new episodes of Bob Love Show, and so on and so forth, and SWAT, and Blue Bloods, etc. However, again, if the strike continues, at least until July, there will be a delay in terms of many of the scripted shows coming back. And then there's Fox, which looks like they will be having to redo their schedule. They're thinking, again, that we think the strike is over. They will have animated shows. Their animated dominated schedule on Sunday nights will go forward because of new episodes, because of the lag time that animation has to go through to get episodes produced. And their unscripted shows will go forward. However, their scripted shows, again, will have a delay. And there's something else I want to say about CBS. As you know, CBS, which used to have as part of Paramount, have a big upfront event at Carnegie Hall, they decided not to do it. The takeaway from me is that's a big mistake. That will end up being a big mistake. Because guess what you don't know? You don't know about what's coming up on CBS. You don't know what's coming up on Paramount Plus. You don't know what's coming up on Nickelodeon. You don't know what's coming up on their other network, on Comedy Central. You don't know what's coming up on VH1 and MTV. You don't know what's coming up on BET and BET Plus. Why? Because rather than take the road that the CW did, a very good road, which was to do a press conference over breakfast, over lunch, sometime, they decided, nah, not doing it. We're going to just do meetings with agencies. And that's fine. We're not asking Paramount, you know, to go back to the days of Carnegie Hall super events. And if you're not going to do those, do something with the press so that the public, you out there, know what's going on. For me, and I may be against the grain on this, I think Paramount blew it. They really blew it. And that's a shame because I think it will hurt their services overall. And frankly, we need to know about what's going on with BET, especially in the light of the possible takeover by somebody else. What's going on with Tyler Perry and Byron Allen and everybody else who's going for that majority stake in BET and all the services they're doing, which is BET Plus, VH1, BET Her, et cetera. So that's the world of broadcast TV. With cable, very little really said. Yes, ESPN got a lot of attention at Walt Disney's Upfront event, which, by the way, was held in a beautiful remake of Javits North Center. Marvelous. Stands tall. It's a wonderful multi-story tower. Beautiful place. Facility, fantastic. But it was really surprising, and it turned out ESPN got the lion's share of the show, at least more than an hour. And yet, there was not much talk about ESPN2. There was not much talk about ESPN Plus, which was really surprising. I mean, ESPN Plus has 25 million subscribers. It's a mega content service. And there was nothing about ESPN Plus, which just marked its fifth anniversary last month. Really surprising. Very little about FX and FX on Hulu. Really very little about Hulu. And ABC did get attention, especially ABC News, ESPN on ABC, and in a thing that I really liked, and I think one of the best things about the Upfront events, local news, local community outreach by ABC stations was very effective. They had the key anchors at Eyewitness News here in New York and WABC, Bill Ritter and Shadi Benoit, come and talk about the value of local programming. Good move by ABC. Good move by Disney to do that. Now the mega content services. Netflix did not have an Upfront event in person. They did have one virtually. I still have yet to see it. And I understand that it was very, very successful. Why? Because they really went the whole 10 yards to talk about that ad-supported tier. What's coming up, how it's shaping out, and so on. No surprise that Netflix stock went way up the last couple of days because they really went the whole 10 yards. Did you know that there are 5 million people now, mostly in the United States, but other parts of the world, who are taking the ad-supported tier 4 or 5 minutes per hour, and that 25% of all new Netflix customers in the United States are also taking the ad-supported tier, and they like it. And while the folks at Netflix did not say how they're going to develop the ad formats, whether they're going to do interactive ads, whether they're going to do shoppable ads, commerce ads, at the very least, they really made a big deal. They gave you as much of the whole 10 yards about where they're at and where they're going with this ad tier as possible. On the flip side of the coin, that's what didn't happen with Disney. Rita Ferro, who is Disney Ad Sales President, was the opening speaker. And I thought they would do a lot about the Disney Plus ad-supported tier, which has been up now for almost 6 months, and how that was going to expand, how it was doing. No dice. What really was one of the big surprises of the whole Upfront period, Ferro, who is a really great executive at Disney, had nothing to say about Disney Plus, the ad tier, how many subscribers it had, how it was being liked, and what the ad opportunities were, including interactive and shoppable ads. Zip. Really surprising. Very disappointing. And I really hope that this was the week to talk about that Disney Plus ad-supported tier and where it's going, and not one word about it. Or I should say, more generic words, not specific words. That's what made Netflix better than Disney Plus in this sort of mini tussle here. Netflix was specific. Disney Plus was not. Same thing with ESPN Plus as well. And also not much said about Hulu, too. The bottom line is that while the writer's strike forced everybody who did an Upfront event to change their tune, where actors, where showrunners were not really present in person, I think overall it was handled very well. The Warner Brothers Discovery did a very good Upfront. I thought Fox had some interesting things in their thing. I thought NBC Universal had a fantastic opening number called Ads, featuring Ted, abrasive teddy bear, dancing on a screen above dancers in like chorus line garb, dancing and prancing all over the stage of Radio City Music Hall. It was really sensational. And by and large, I think they held themselves pretty well. I wish there was more said. And given what they had to do, not bad. Not bad at all. The bottom line, you're going to see a lot more unscripted shows. particularly on the broadcast networks, Netflix, and the main content service look very, very good in terms of original content, at least for the fall, the rest of 2023, maybe early 2024. Cable, not looking good. NFL, very, very big on adding games to mega content services. And I think you're going to see a lot more beyond NFL Sunday Ticket with YouTube. Roger Goodell made an unexpected appearance at the YouTube Brandcast. He did not go anywhere else. He just went to YouTube. And I think that says a lot about where he thinks YouTube is going with NFL Sunday Ticket and beyond, including additional shows, additional content, and YouTube Shorts. So it was a whale of a week, and it's been a whale of a month so far. And I want to go back to Telly one more time because this story took place starting on Monday. And I think the fact that despite not much said in the major press about Telly, the fact that they were able to get 100,000-plus orders for their free smart TV set, there's a lot I have to say there's a lot to deal with because they're banking on advertisers to really get involved. There are some privacy issues. Maybe, and they're off to a great start, and pay attention to Telly. We are, and again, we're going to try to have the people from Telly on this program. Well, now joining us on this program, as we get to the top of the hour, is one of the kingpins of unscripted television. He runs his own company, A. Smith & Company. His credits include the long-running NBC series American Ninja Warrior, and some of Fox's long-running series, including a few with Gordon Ramsay, like Hell's Kitchen and Kitchen Nightmares, which is coming back for a brand-new season, first time in a long while on Fox during this upcoming 2023-24 season. Joining us live from Los Angeles in an area exclusive, the man behind A. Smith & Company, Arthur Smith. Arthur, welcome in.
Oh, thank you. Good to be talking to you today.
Same here, Arthur. First of all, what did you think about the upfronts? Did you conclude, like I did, that we're going to see a whale of a lot more unscripted television this fall, at least in the broadcast networks?
Yeah, I think there's a fair amount on the schedule. It's broadcast networks have been moving with more unscripted television because it's been working. So, it seems like the unscripted world is getting its fair share of the primetime schedule.
And if memory is correct, it was in the writer's strike 15 years ago, back in 2007, the first year of our program, that unscripted really took a big leap forward. You got a chance to see more shows on the air all over the place.
Yeah, I think that's true. But, I mean, good shows work because they work. I mean, for us right now, I got to tell you, it's business as usual. I'm really hoping that the writer's strike gets solved really quickly. I think it's a very difficult time for our industry. I'm hoping that there's a win-win situation. I'm feeling for the writers, I really hope they get it done quickly. You know, the unscripted shows, they work because they work, not because there's a strike or because there's this unrest in the business. I just hope it all gets solved really quickly.
And incidentally, Arthur, time after time, these upfront events, whether it was Mark Lazarus at NBC Universal, or Dennis Miller and Brad Schwartz at the CW, John Steinlauf and Casey Boyes at Warner Bros. Discovery, Casey, the head of HBO, they all said, we went into this strike, we respect the writers. Some of them had sequences where they had the writers and showrunners pre-taped before the strike happened, and I think that was a very classy thing to do. I really think that they were very, very classy in the face of all the strikes, of all the picket lines.
And honestly, and so they should be. You know, it's a very difficult time. The business has changed, and it's to no fault of the writers. You know, it's the evolution of our industry, and now, you know, things need to be made fair and appropriate. And you know, we all know about how the streaming world has impacted the industry with shorter orders and less back end and issues like that. And all those things need to be addressed. And I'm really hopeful that at the end of the day, I mean, it's going to happen, and people are going to have to do the right thing. You know, on the other side, the companies are having a difficult time. You know, they're dealing with their own issues of, multiple platforms and fragmentation of the marketplace. But I believe that there's a win-win situation coming. It's just going to take some time, unfortunately, hopefully not too much time to get it solved.
Arthur Smith, the head of A. Smith & Company, which has a lot of great shows all over the map, broadcast, cable, mega content. He's our guest for the rest of this Tomorrow Be Televised episode, and we will be back with him as we pause at the bottom of the hour, or excuse me, the top of the hour, for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com, together reaching over 80 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Coming your way today at BTR, it's the Honeycomb Hideout Radio Show. If you want some wonderful entertainment, check it out today. The Honeycomb Hideout Radio Show. That's today at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively and only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com, which now is available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles where you are. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised for this Friday afternoon, the 19th of May, 2023. And welcome to those just joining us at the top of the hour. Tomorrow I'm with you live from Nueva York, 66 degrees at the top of the hour. Beautiful day here in the Big Apple. Hope things are good wherever you may be. And we've got with us Arthur Smith. He is one of the top people in the world of unscripted television, runs his own company. That company, A. Smith & Company, produces the shows American Ninja Warrior on NBC, Hell's Kitchen, and Kitchen Nightmares, both involving Gordon Ramsay on Fox. And Arthur, where do things stand going into this time of the year for you?
I'm sorry, one more time. Where does things stand?
Where do things stand with your company going into this time of year? Because this is the time of year where we have shows like American Ninja Warrior coming up on NBC, other things you do, other people do. Where do things stand with your company?
Well, you know, I'm very blessed with, you know, a great company that's been going on for 23 years. And you know, our development is very robust. You know, we have our long-running shows like Hell's Kitchen, which we have completed season 22, which will air later this year. And then American Ninja Warrior season 15 is back on June 5th. And for that show, it's the biggest changes we've actually ever made to the format. And, you know, within the format, there's this element that we've added where the ninjas have to go against the ninjas in this dual course and race off against each other. It's part of the biggest format change, as I said, that's been made in the history of the show. So very excited about our 15th season. And, you know, the thing about our company and the joy of running this company for 23 years is my life and my career. You know, I've been in sports. I was head of program production at Fox Sports and head of CBC Sports a long, long time ago, worked for Dick Clark, worked at Universal. So I bounced around in all genres and stuff like that, all in the nonfiction genres. And the great joy of my company is that we cover all the genres and subgenres of nonfiction television. And so along with Hell's Kitchen and American Ninja Warrior, which are two completely different shows, there's also, you know, shows like Welcome to Plathville, which is in our fifth season on TLC, which will be coming up later this year. Our show Unsung, which is our documentary series, which is won the NAACP Award 7 times. And there's some new stuff. We just recently announced a new project with the WWE, which is Future Superstars of the Future with the WWE, which is a very, very different show. The first time that people are allowed or viewers will be allowed into the process of seeing how WWE goes and recruits and finds the next superstars. We have shot 60 to 70% of the show, and it's incredible. It's incredible. Some people will think of it as kind of like the Hard Knocks of the WWE. The storyline is different, but the style is kind of similar. I'm really excited about that. That's coming out on Roku. And, it's just been a great time for us. There's a lot of great stuff in development. Some stuff I wish I could talk about today that you're going to be hearing about over the next month or so. You know, it's been such an amazing ride at the company that I recently have written my first book, which is coming out on June 6th. It's called Reach, The Hard Lessons and Learned Truths from a Lifetime in Television. And that's coming out, on June 6th. It's available for pre-order now. How's that for a plug? I worked in my own plug. I love that. And it's a great time. I'm so passionate about, you know, our business and what is going on in the industry right now. I mean, after all, I believe this is the golden age of television, and it is the golden age of nonfiction television as well. So it's a great time.
And I want to talk more about Reach and why you decided to get into book writing, as we did with Mark Graff earlier in the program. And instead, we would like to offer that book as a classic trivia prize, too. So we want to get the negotiation going on that. But first, go back to the WWE situation. Was this an easy thing to get in terms of an easy thing for WWE and Vince McMahon and crew to open themselves up, if you will, to how they as they recruit people who want to be in the pro wrestling game?
You know, a number of years ago, as you probably remember, there was a show called Tough Enough, which I always thought was really good. It was a really interesting show, and I thought that it always appealed to me because being a WWE wrestler requires requires a lot of skills. You have to have the look, you have to have the physicality, you have to have the ability to ad lib and be a great personality. And it's unlike any other profession. I was so interested in how this process actually worked. And we were looking at doing something truly authentic. And, thankfully, Vince and Paul Levesque, Triple H, were behind this right from the very beginning. They saw the merits of it. And the thing is, over the years, the WWE has created this process where they go out and recruit top athletes from college, top athletes from, a variety of sports, and they go into a training camp. And there's the physical part, there's the personality test that they have to go through, and it's so interesting. It's so riveting. And we had heard about this, and we went to them with this prospect, and they were already thinking of doing something, so it was like the perfect timing for us to come together. We had an idea. They were thinking about the same idea, and so we joined forces, and Roku got it right away. So it's been a blast. I'm really, really, really excited for people to see it because it's a peek into the world of WWE that nobody's seen. And it's not just for WWE fans are going to love it, but I think it's really a show that's made for everybody because it's all about aspirations. And, I will tell you that when the moment comes when they get offered a contract, it's so emotional. It's so emotional, and it's such a beautiful thing to see.
And if you have a question or comment for our guest, Arthur Smith, make a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers been anywhere. Your catchers, of course, the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. We also have our chat room open. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. American Ninja Warrior, why do you think that has really captured not only the imagination of people, but it just seems to grow and grow and grow? And a couple of years ago, we had Matt, one of your hosts of the show, because it did so well that he was named the host of Peacock's Olympic coverage, which he's done the last two times. It just seems that his career is growing. The career of his co-host is growing. It just seems to be a great platform for not only great concepts, but also great hosts.
Yeah. Well, Matt Eisman and Akbar Jabajabialamila, are amazing. It was funny, I was just on the phone with Akbar moments before we got on, and we were talking about season 15, which people have to check out. It's a phenomenal season. We have shot most of it, and I think people are going to be blown away. History is made this season. I'm not going to tell you how or what or whatever, but the format changes and everything that goes with it. A long time ago, because we're in our 15th season, there was a show called Sasuke, which was the show, the original show that was done in Japan. And a friend of mine who was running a network called G4 at the time was airing Sasuke. He was airing the Japanese show. This gentleman's name is Neil Tiles. A lot of this is covered in the book. You got to read the book. But I will tell you that Neil, he approached me and said, do you think there's something in an American version? And we started producing this thing. But the thing that I noticed in the Japanese show that got to me right away was the people who were running the course. It was a plumber. It was a dental hygienist. It was a construction worker. It was a CEO. And I knew there was something in the story. I knew there was something in why these people ran and what this course represented to them. The course was kind of a metaphor for life. And that's where I saw the magic in the show. Because let's face it, at the time, it was pretty illogical for an obstacle course show to be featured on primetime television on NBC. But, you know, we didn't start out that way. We started out on G4 Network. We produced the show. The show did really well on G4. And then it really was kind of lucky for us, fortunate for us, that around the time, 3 years into the show, Comcast had bought NBC Universal. And purely as an act of synergy, they aired our finale, our G4 finale on NBC. Never did we expect that you and I would be having this conversation about the 15th season going on NBC this summer. And the show did really well. And at the time, NBC said, well, let's try a little more. And G4 and NBC split the time. They shared the amount of episodes. And then gradually NBC took it over, and then the show became this great hit. It's so wonderful for me to say, I mean, it's been such a blessing, the show. And, you know, what's happening out there in America is also incredible, and around the world, actually, because the sport of ninja has become a sport. And, you know, there's ninja gyms all across the country that, you know, there's kids who do ninja and they don't do soccer now. It's like, it's really interesting how this television show has really developed this great sport that's out there. And like I said, it's just been amazing to watch. And the talent is incredible. The talent has been amazing. You know, there are kids who grew up watching the show who are now 15 and 16 years old, and they're just unbelievable. So I think a lot of the appeal, you know, goes to ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And, you know, it's funny when we, every so often I'll, a rerun of an early season, you know, appears on television, and I'll check it out. And if you look at the course as to what it was in the early season, as to what the course is now, it's unbelievable the difference. It's incredible what we're asking them to do. And we have to keep pushing the boundaries and the obstacles further and further because they're so talented. It's been an amazing ride. And like I said, a lot of there's some stories that I've never told before that people can check out. If you're a ninja fan, check out Reach, which is, as I said, coming out on June 6th.
And by the way, give our best to Matt. It was a pleasure to interview a couple of years ago when he got the job to host the Peacock coverage of the Olympics, and I hope that they will do it again next year in Paris in 2024. One program you just mentioned that a lot of people don't know about that you do is Unsung for TV One. It's an NAACP Image Award winner. It's won other awards too. It's one of those shows that, because TV One does not do a lot of publicity and does not do a lot of press outreach, sadly, including being, it used to do an upfront event here in New York, which they have stopped doing. They really, frankly, wanted to get back to doing it. A lot of people don't know about it. I mean, tell us about how you decided to do Unsung and how is it doing?
Well, Unsung, I'm very proud of. As you said, thank you for that. It's won the NAACP Award 7 times. And, you know, for some people, you know, it's funny when we talk to people and, like, every so often, you know, we'll meet somebody and they go, I love your show. And I go, you know, I usually go to American Ninja Warrior, or they go, no, not that show. I go, oh, Hell's Kitchen. And they go, no, Unsung. And the viewers who watch it are very, very passionate about the show. And that one started off as a test. It was really a four episode test, and the show did so well and became part of a franchise show on TV One. And you know, I'm really, really glad that it's in our lineup. We told great stories of great artists and stories that had never been told before. And it's run by our docs division at A. Smith & Co. It's run by a guy by the name of Frank Spitton, who's also president of our company, and he's got a great team who works on it. And yeah, I'm very proud of it.
Arthur Smith is our guest this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. He is one of the big players in the world of unscripted television, American Ninja Warrior, Hell's Kitchen, Kitchen Nightmares, a lot of great things from his company, Smith & Company. He's also the author of a new book called Reach, and he's our guest this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised live from Los Angeles. Time out with you live from the other side of the US of A, namely New York City, 66 degrees at the top of the hour. We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, we have a very special and unique weekend edition of our show for the very first time. It's coming your way on Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific. That's 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific. Our very special guest live from Israel will be co-star and creator of the Series Best 2023 pilot winner in the world of comedy called Chauncey. Her name is Alicia Chenoweth. I think you'll really enjoy meeting her, and she will be with us live from Israel at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, this Sunday, exclusively here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Arthur, in terms of the range of shows you do, what do you think about the fact that you have a bigger playground to work with? Because you not only have broadcast television, you not only have cable, you've got all these mega content services, and you have all these other services that are happening on smart TV sets, smart devices, multi-channel bundles, and you even have, as you mentioned, you know, these products like Roku that are not only aggregating content, they're creating content. They're causing content and causing channels. And as you mentioned, the WWE show is one of them.
Yeah, I know it's an exciting time to be a content producer. And, you know, our company has evolved because it's been around for 23 years. I remember, you know, when we first started our company, we were mainly a producer for broadcast television. Then cable started investing more money into, you know, content and nonfiction content. So we rode that wave. And now streaming and now all the services and the new services like Roku you talked about, it's a great time. You know, it's funny. Years ago, there'd be a genre would be in, like game shows are in now, and or, you know, competition shows are in now. But now every genre is in. Every genre is in. You just, so for as a producer, the way we develop shows is we find things that we're passionate about, and then we find a buyer who can, who's doing that genre, because, you know, there's no such thing as the ebb and flow of, like, certain genres are in. All genres are in. It's, you just have to find the right place for it. And look at what's happened to documentaries. I mean, I've never seen a better time for, you know, feature-length documentaries and documentary series than right now. You know, it's a funny thing. It's like, you know, when I go for dinner with my friends, and I'm sure this is similar to a lot of the people listening today, is, you know, 10 years ago, you used to go out for dinner, you talk about your sports teams, you talk about your family, you talk about your kids if you have them, you talk about, you know, general thing. Sooner or later, during that dinner conversation, almost every dinner conversation I have with somebody is, eventually we get to the topic of, what are you watching? Because there's so much great content, and there's so many great things out there. And it is, there's never been a time in our history where there's been so many great things to watch. And it's such a great time. And like I said, it's a great time to be a producer because there's so many outlets to who carry programming and a great way to showcase the work that we do.
One of the areas that you've really excelled, Arthur, is culinary competitions, especially the work you've done with Gordon Ramsay on shows like Hell's Kitchen and Kitchen Nightmares, which I mentioned earlier is coming back for a brand new season, first in some time on Fox. What do you make of the whole scene of culinary competitions? I mean, Food Network has really gone into it whole hog, from Chopped to Beat Bobby Flay to some of the new ones like Chow Italy that just started, Alex vs. America. You have, of course, Top Chef is now going strong, not only on Bravo, but also its Spanish-language version, Top Chef VIP, is now a two-hour show, weeknights on Telemundo from 7 to 9 o'clock Eastern time. What do you think of that whole genre and where it's at?
It's great to see, and man, has the world changed. And, you know, in 2004, when we first started producing Hell's Kitchen, it aired in 2005, food was in a much different place in America than it is today, you know. And the thing about Hell's Kitchen at the time, prior to Hell's Kitchen, there had never been a successful food show on network television. Yes, there had been some cable shows that have worked and some more niche-y kind of shows, but as you know, doing a show on a broadcast network, you have to be broad. You have to appeal to more than just foodies. And the show was designed that way. Right from the very beginning, you know, we knew we had to design something that was broad and that had appeal way beyond, you know, the foodies of the country. So, you know, that was, like I said, that was the design of the show. And Gordon Ramsay at that time wasn't as well known as he is today. The most famous chef in the world and an amazing talent and an instinctive producer and a great guy. But at the time, you know, Gordon was known to, you know, known in the UK. He was a Michelin star chef. He was an accomplished chef, but he certainly didn't have, the attention that he has now. And so, you know, it was a big risk at the time, and there were a lot of people nervous about that time. But one of the things I believe about our genre is that this genre, most of the hits that come from this genre come from networks taking risks and producers taking risks, you know, fresh ideas. And now Pucho's on everywhere is Main Street, you know, fair. But at the time in 2004, like I said, doing a primetime network series with food at the center of it was a big risk. And there wasn't anything like it. But, you know, the dinner service that we do, Gordon Ramsay was unlike any other, you know, chef or unlike anything else ever seen on television. And so it's been great to see. And the interesting thing, and you mentioned it, you know, Top Chef and Chopped and things like that. And Top Chef is, you know, season 19, I believe, or close to 20. Hell's is 22. And food has changed in America along with the television shows. And I don't think, you know, that's a coincidence. It's just like, you know, we were talking about the impact that American Ninja Warrior has had in the world of what sports in terms of what kids are doing and ninja gyms, et cetera. And in a similar but different way, I think food on television has, along with a number of other factors, I don't think it's exclusive to what television has done, has really changed the way people view food in America. And I think the nation has the palate has expanded, and I think people are more into food than ever. Of course, social media has an impact on that as well, but, you know, certainly all these factors combined. So it's, like I said, it's very interesting for me to see what's happened in the last 20 years.
When it comes to game shows, it looks like after the last couple of years when we've had a lot of the great game shows impacted by the coronavirus pandemic, we've had either no audiences, having to use an audience track, applause track, et cetera, or have smaller audiences like Let's Make a Deal, Price is Right, and so forth. It looks like things are starting to really come back, and we see a lot more activity. For example, Game Show Network is launching 5 game shows this year. They've already done 2, Switched. Mm-hmm. Which is started at 7 o'clock, is now at 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock nightly strip. Split Second, the revival of that great show with John Michael Higgins just started. Looks like they're doing very well. Next month, I believe Tom Cavanaugh, formerly of Ed, is doing Hey Yahoo. Where is your company standing in terms of either bringing back game shows or starting new ones?
Yeah, I mean, game shows is part of the thing that we do. And so we have some things in development. There's some announcements that we'll probably be making later this year. It's funny, you were talking about, the pandemic and the impact that the pandemic had on game shows and audiences, et cetera. We shot Mental Samurai, the second season of Mental Samurai with Rob Lowe in Portugal because we had the order from Fox, but L.A. was kind of shut down, and it was a bad time in terms of what was happening in L.A., and studios were closed and things like that, and Portugal was better than L.A. And the reason why we went to Portugal was Mental Samurai had been sold, around the world, and there was our set was being used. There was a copy of our set being used in Portugal, and it was all set up. And we took 100 American contestants and a small American crew. And Rob Lowe, and went to Lisbon, and shot the entire series in Portugal with a half Portuguese, half American crew, and it was kind of amazing, actually. You know, it's like when you have to figure something out, you just do, right? You know, we found a way to make it work. You know, we found a way to stay in production, even if it meant going to Portugal. But now, you know, things, as you said, have returned. Audiences are back. We're glad to have audiences back at American Ninja Warrior. It was a difficult time, but I'm glad it's behind us. But we all got through it. And, you know, one of the other interesting things, you know, we were talking about American Ninja Warrior is that, you know, I remember that the first night of shooting, we were shooting in Los Angeles, and we had you know, about 1,000 people in an audience. We had the, you know, our athletes all ready to go. And everything was set up. Our set, which is massive, was all built, cameras all there, crew all there. And we had to cancel that night. We had to cancel that first night of shooting and shut down. And we were, it was the first night. We were literally hours away from our first night of shooting. But, you know, it, with, you know, safety being the number one thing and looking out for everybody, it was the only thing to do. It was the right, of course it was the right thing to do, but it really was the only thing to do because, you know, naturally we wanted to be prudent. And, you know, a few months later, we ended up figuring out safety protocols and shooting it. But I'm kind of glad that chapter's behind us, like a lot of people. But you do what you have to. And it's actually pretty amazing to watch what our industry, how it all came together, and we figured out ways how to keep making television shows.
And incidentally, there is a precedent because Fox, I remember Name That Tune, the first season at least, was shot in Australia. The revival of Name That Tune, mm-hmm. with Jane Krakowski. And way back when, remember Lingo? When the
sure.
Chuck Woolley version came on GSN, the first episodes were actually shot not in the United States, but in the Netherlands, believe it or not. And the early episodes did so well, then they decided to go back to Los Angeles with Phil Gurn in the executive producer role and finally make it happen. And it turned out to be like running for 6 years and did quite well. And before we leave you, Arthur, is there a game show growing up that you enjoy that you would like to at some point maybe revive?
Well, you know, a lot of people have tried. Well, my favorite game show of all time is The Pyramid. And I, you know, I grew up watching it. I ended up working with Dick Clark. Dick Clark is the person who got me my green card and got me to America 30 years ago. So that show Michael Strahan's doing, and I love Michael. And Michael and I worked together at Fox Sports, and Michael did Pros versus Joes for us a number of years ago. Is there, you know, most of the great formats? I'm thinking now. You got me thinking. Most of the great formats have come back or are coming back. I'm trying to think of what's left, and I can't. And nothing pops into my head. Right now, I was a game show fanatic too. I love game shows, and I'm enjoying this resurgence, and I'm enjoying developing new ones. Nothing pops into my head right now. I would have loved to done Pyramid.
I'll give you a thought.
But
before we go, Video Village,
the
Money Hole Show, Video Village. I think you'll do a great job with that. Check it out on YouTube. Some of the episodes there.
Okay.
And unfortunately, we have to run.
Right.
Again, Arthur's got a new book out called Reach. We'll keep you an eye for it, let you know when it's coming out. We hope to maybe get a classic trivia question prize out of it. And if you want to know more about all the shows that Arthur is doing, go to asmithcompany.com. That's asmithco.com. American Ninja Warrior comes back for a brand new season next month on NBC. Arthur, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure all the way. Got to have you back soon. It's been a treat.
Thank you, Simon.
And have a great weekend. Take care.
You too.
Arthur Smith from A. Smith & Company joining us live from Los Angeles. Thanks to both of our guests for being with us today. All of you for tuning in. Remember, we are on again Sunday, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, with Alisa Chenoweth from Chansky, the co-star and the creator of that Series Fest 2023 pilot winner. We'll be back again then and on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, speaker to the radio, all of our podcast site and website as well. But tomorrow we televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a fantastic weekend again. Sunday, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, speaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our podcast website destinations. Whatever you're doing now and then, please make it safe. Please make it wonderful and great, not only for you, but for others you love too. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.